Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Colosseum of Rome is one of the few ancient wonders that still survives to this day. Historians have learnt much about this fantastic structure and about the lives of Roman citizens through the study of this one building. The Colosseum became the centre of Rome, the ultimate entertainment for the masses and a tool for politicians. And you would expect that it would be haunted by at least a few ghosts, as hundreds of thousands of slaves and gladiators and wild animals met their untimely end in the arena. There have been reports of screams, growls, ghostly figures on the stairs, and cold patches of air.
Skeptics will point out that the interior of the Colosseum is cold because of all the stone. But some believe that there's a more supernatural explanation. The tunnels below the Colosseum, which were once crowded with gladiators and slaves preparing for combat, are particularly chilly. And it's impossible to walk through the gate of death without getting goosebumps. The brutality, depravity, and spectacle that occurred on this site over so many years would lead us all to believe that is truly one of the most haunted sites in all of Rome.
Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne, and we welcome you to this week's episode of the True Hauntings podcast, where we head to Italy, the Colosseum.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow, forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
Hello, Anne. Hello. How are you?
Oh, just fabulous.
That's wonderful.
But look, we've made it.
Yes.
There will be no gaps in the podcast.
Yes, we are on the other side.
Yes. Well, we're not on the other side of the world. We're
on the other side of our trip.
Yes. Well, for them, it's on the other side of the trip, but we managed to get everything recorded before we went because we thought there might have been one short, but geez, we've been troopers.
We have. And this is actually being recorded 3 days before we leave.
And we've got trauma yet again. The ongoing saga of the Alex and Sarah wedding. My son Alex and his beautiful bride-to-be, Sarah, have postponed their wedding a few times and they were getting married tomorrow. Did you hear me say we're getting married?
Yeah.
Alex rang me this morning and said, Mum, the wedding's off. And I went, yeah, April Fool's. Very funny. No. Yeah, Mum, the wedding is off. Yeah, sure, Alex. Very funny. No, this isn't funny. You're not doing this, Alex. Mum, the wedding is off. I said, Alex, say to me, this is not an April Fool's joke. Mum, this is not an April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
I didn't believe him. I honestly thought he was doing an April Fool's joke. But apparently their housemate has COVID. So they're now all locked down again.
Oh, dear.
Which means I'm not going to get to see them get married because they're going to get married on the 9th of April now and I'll be gone. I'll be gone.
You can watch via Zoom. We'll do a Zoom call.
At 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yes. Why not?
Why not?
We'll sit there with champagne in our Jimmy Jams.
And I'll cry.
That's all right.
That's all right. You can pass me a tissue and say, suck it up, bitch.
Suck it up, bitch.
I know you so well.
Suck it up.
But Renata, are you packed?
No, not at all.
Me neither.
I got nothing ready, absolutely nothing.
I've got knickers. I've got about 20 pairs of knickers stuffed in a bag and that's it.
I don't even have that. I'll have to go knicker shopping tomorrow.
Ooh, I'm not coming with you.
No.
And look, we were sort of trying to work out where were we going to go for this last one, the last podcast before we took off. And we wanted to go to another country. And I said, surely there's got to be ghost stories about the Colosseum. There's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went, oh, hell, let's do the Colosseum.
Yeah, let's do the Colosseum.
So here we are, about to do the Colosseum.
Yes, but have you told everyone where we're staying for the last few nights in London before we come home?
Oh, a holy retreat place. The roof, the roof will fall in on our head.
Staying in a nunnery. Oh, no.
But it was such a good price and parking was included and we got a free breakfast.
Oh, my gosh. It is so expensive to stay anywhere in London, my goodness.
Yeah, and this is pretty much on the River Thames. Mm-hmm. And
only 3 and a bit kilometres into...
Miles.
Miles, okay.
That's about 7 kilometres. But, I mean, that's still not far. We've got a car.
Yes.
So we can whiz about and we can probably Uber it from there, which would be more sensible if we're going into the middle of town. Mm-hmm. So...
It does have some nice places to pray. We'll be fine.
Oh, pray the roof doesn't fall in.
We'll be fine. See, we're this desperate.
Yeah,
and it's like, so expensive.
We were about to celebrate and say, "Hey, we've booked everything. That's it." And I went, "Oh shoot, we've still got a couple of nights in Ireland that we haven't looked at." That's it. We've got the flights booked.
Yes.
The internal flights are booked. We've got the bags sorted.
Uh-huh.
We've got all the car hire done.
Mm-hmm.
It's only about 2 or 3 nights we've got to find accommodation for.
Right.
And we're done.
Okay.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, 3 nights.
We'll get onto that after we do this. But let's hook into the Colosseum.
And we'll get our final podcast done so that we know that you guys won't miss out while we're gone. Unlike the years to come, the Colosseum was not yet regarded as a sacred or holy site, but rather a spiritual conduit to an arcane past. While historical facts are light in this area, the autobiographical account by Benvenuto Cellini, a Florentine sculptor living in the 16th century Italy, does shed some light on this strange period when old beliefs lingered along the edges of an increasingly religious time. As it went, Cellini meets a curious Sicilian priest who shares his knowledge of the occult, and specifically, the raising of the dead. Cellini expresses his deep desire to partake in such a ceremony and assures the priest he has both the strength and stamina to take on such a demanding element of the black arts. The two men meet in the shadows of the Roman Colosseum, where the priest appears in necromancer robes and draws meticulous circles in the earth while burning strong essential oils in the fire, breathing in the fetid odour of the drug. Cellini goes on to explain how he called on the spirits to reunite him with his ancestors, but was told by the priest that he would need to come back again, this time with a young male virgin, if he hoped to see his wishes granted. When he returned with the innocent boy, the priest began his awful invocations in Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, once again calling on the legion of demons residing in the walls of the amphitheatre. Although Cellini himself does not see much, both the boy and the necromancer claim to see thousands of spirits emerge from the rock, all the most dangerous of all the denizens of hell, and batter their tired forms against the boundaries of the sacred circle. they escape unscathed and are followed home by two devils from the Colosseum who, through this supernatural invitation, were released onto the quiet streets of Rome.
Boy.
That went dark, didn't it?
It did.
And I'm not going to raise eyebrows at all about the priest wanting the young virgin boy.
No.
No. No. No.
That seems tame to all the other shit that went on there. I thought I would enjoy this. I didn't.
Really?
No, I didn't. It became something that just became revolting. Revolting and really...
Humans are foul creatures.
Horrid. Horrid.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. We'll vomit it all up on us, will you?
Okay. So just be aware, guys, that when we go into the history, which I'm going to do, I may say things that are pretty dark and terrible. So,
as if what I just did wasn't.
If you are a little bit squeamish about stuff that went on in the Colosseum and you think you know about the stuff that went on in the Colosseum, just bear in mind. I'm not going to hold back because this stuff is part of history.
Yep.
But there could be things that will trigger. And so just be aware.
Should I get a bucket ready for you to vomit or anything?
No, there's just one or two things. I'm not going to linger on them for too long, but I just want people to understand that it was pretty horrifying.
And I just wanted to say that that soundscape today came from theravenreport.com. From Gladiators to Ghosts, What Happened When the Colosseum Survived Time?
Mm.
That was a great one, wasn't it?
Mm. Yes. So the Colosseum is a huge oval amphitheatre. Thank you.
Done. And you read out all my ghost stories at the start. So that's it. Thank you for joining us on this week's episode.
And the Romans liked to leave a mark wherever they went, and they constructed a lot of Colosseums.
They did a lot of good and they did a lot of evil.
Yeah. What's the Monty Python thing?
What did the Romans do for us? They built the aqueducts. What about viniculture? You guys know all those quotes, don't you? You are that vintage. You know them.
You are our people. It took 10 years to build, and it could house more than 50,000 spectators. And there were good seats and there were bad seats.
Yes, like any theatre, there's obstructed views.
Yes.
With this giant cross.
And there was one spot where, because I was reading about this, I'll probably get to it, where they were trying to work out where the loos were, where the toilets were.
Or the privies.
The privies. And they said in one of the things that I read that there was a very conspicuous drain in one area that kind of ran around one of the walkways. And they're kind of thinking that maybe that's where... They were
looking at the little brown things floating past. I don't know. What's that? Is that a chocolate donut? Yum, yum. I might pick that up and eat it.
Well, maybe that's why people would walk around with food. That's where they got that from.
Where the sushi tray was invented. Just all these little floating things going flying past in a river.
No. Oh, God.
Where does my mind go sometimes? I wonder.
I've only read two sentences here. And it was used for gladiatorial contests, battles, exotic animal hunts, executions, and other similar entertainment.
Woohoo!
Yeah, for the Roman people. So the four-story building measured 188 by 156 metres. And it was inaugurated by Emperor Titus in 80 AD. I would have got hung for that.
Yep.
Yep. And it owes its name to a nearby colossal statue of Emperor Nero. Oh, they were all good blokes back then, weren't they?
Oh, they were all big. They had to put their private bits to look rather large and exciting because they'd all have the orgies and they'd go, there's an advertisement for what's on tonight.
So the Great Fire of Rome allowed the Colosseum to be built. So the centre of Rome had many people living and working in it by 200 BC. But then in AD 64, the Great Fire of Rome spread through the city. God, it would have burnt to a cinder. My goodness. And Emperor Nero claimed the centre of the city for himself. This shall be mine!
Mine.
And he built a palace with a lake, of course he did, pavilions and gardens. And when Nero died, Emperor Vespasian...
Oh, that's beautiful, Renata.
Yeah, I mean, the Vespa is named after him.
Oh, wow, can you sit on him and ride him down too?
He wanted the area returned to the people, and so he decided the best thing to do was to build an amphitheatre. So he filled in the lake, levelled the palace and gardens, and built an amphitheatre. There you go, Nero.
Take that.
Stuff you.
Are we going to make it through this podcast today? We're hysterically tired.
No. So Nero was not well liked by the people of Rome.
Oh, can't I see why?
And Emperor Vespasian hoped that by creating this fantastic amphitheatre would make people love him
oh,
more.
Oh, they all love him so much more than that Nero person.
Kill more people. So it was 80 AD that it was built, and there was a huge celebration when it opened, and gladiators came in to play games.
I've got a hockey stick. Do you want to play a game with me? I've got a nice skull here. Shall I whack it to you? Oh. We can play hacky sack. Oh, I've got a testicle here. Let's play hacky sack.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And this lasted 100 days.
Oh, with the testicles, a hacky sack? It'd be a bit pongy by then.
We're not going to get far.
I'm sorry, everyone. We're a little broken.
Right, so... this 100-day shebang started in the morning and continued until it was too dark to see the combatants or the combatants.
Did they just walk around with a stick poking in the darkness hoping they whack someone? Or is that when they released the lions and the tigers that could see in the dark?
No, that's a whole other story.
Oh, that's a different story. Oh, sorry, I'm jumping the gun there.
So just even during this time itself... And you've got to laugh because otherwise you'll cry at this. It's just disgusting. there were thousands of gladiators and convicts that were killed, and they reckon that 9,000 animals died just in those games. Mm. 9,000.
Yeah.
Like, anyhow. It wasn't originally called the Colosseum. It was actually called the Amphitheatrum Flavium.
God, the Flavium really good.
Amphitheatrum Flavium. Anyway.
It's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
It was built during the Flavian dynasty and named after them.
Flavium?
Flavium.
Was it named after Flavium?
Early Romans also called it the Caesar's Amphitheatre. I'm not going to try and say that. Mm-hmm. And when Nero had his palace on the spot, he built a colossal statue to himself, as
of
you
course.
Do, to the entrance of his palace.
Parrot.
He named it the Colossus of Rhodes.
Oh, yes. I do remember that from a history class. I don't know what it was, but I do remember it.
Yeah, it stood nearly 100 feet high. Oh, what an ego.
Mm.
What a little penis he must have had, anyway.
I bet they didn't put that on the statue.
No, there would have been a fig leaf or something there. And many people began calling the amphitheatre the Colosseum in honour of the Colossus of Rhodes. In time, the statue was remodelled to represent Helios, the god of the sun, Apollo, and the statue's head was changed several times to represent different emperors.
Just make the cheekbones a little higher,
how
the nose a bit
that?
Shorter,
there's only
testicles
so much,
a bit lower.
There's only so much marble. How do you do that? Did the head get smaller every time?
Oh, dear.
Oh, want to know what that...
Just for the spec fill. Can you do anything with spec fill?
Concrete. I'm good at concrete.
Have a cup.
Okay. So...
Oh, this is what happens when we try to do too much work before we leave. Oh. All right, we're right. We're okay. Take a breath. I don't think she's breathing. Hang on. Okay, I think we've managed to pull ourselves together enough to keep going. I'm not quite sure.
So there was no charge to get into the Colosseum. Instead, the tickets were given away free to the citizens of Rome, but you had to indicate your rank in society because the best seats were close to the arena floor and they were normally reserved for senators, and the next level was for knights and nobles, and then there was an area for freed men, and at the very top were the seats for freed women and slaves. Now, that's interesting because in many cases nowadays, the top seats are good seats. Because you can see everything.
The nosebleed territory.
Mm. So each archway...
I don't know about you, but they're not good seats. They're crap seats.
Each archway leading into the arena had a number engraved above it, and the tickets showed which archway you were to enter through and you were to sit at. Oh, very well done.
So they've got ticker tech.
Getting the best seats... meant knowing the right people. And once the best seats had been given out, the tickets would be available to anyone who wanted them from the public to come in. So the gladiators didn't always know who they would be fighting, but sometimes they were fighting their friends.
Yeah.
Which is like...
And they had to fight to the death, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah. So many of them kind of didn't lift their heads or wore like helmets so they wouldn't have to look the other person in the eye. Lions and other wild animals were also used, and they were brought in at great cost into the Colosseum. So
they used to have like lifts and things that they constructed where men would sort of push the levees and walk around in a circle and wind them up, and the animals would appear out of the ground sort of thing, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they would be like... trap doors underneath and they would have this system where they would wind the trap door up with the animal and then sort of it would come up to the level of the arena and the trap door would open and it looked like they would spring out of the earth.
You know what it reminds me of? The Hunger Games. Because you just never knew what was going to come out next. And you would have had someone who was, like a grand designer, a director, so directing all the action of, you know, if it was getting a bit slow and they were getting a bit tired, they'd throw in a wild animal to spice it up. So very similar.
So the Colosseum was made of concrete, of course.
Oh, concrete
I
back
came,
then.
I came, I saw a concreted. That's what Italians do.
Was there a little boy statue? Well, you know how they have the little boy statues with a fig leaf?
So concrete is a mixture of gravel, sand and a powdered substance, usually lime-based, which sets hard upon drying. The use of concrete-like materials had been around since 6500 BC.
BC?
Like, that's nuts. Absolutely nuts. It was apparently pioneered by the builders of Petra.
Oh.
Yeah. Who were Bedouin traders, and they built cities in the desert. There you go. So concrete allowed them to build canals and pools to control the small amount of water that fell into the desert. In 200 BC, the Romans began using it on a larger scale, and they rediscovered adding volcanic ash to the mixture, which made the concrete harder and allowed it to set underwater.
Oh, wow. So clever.
So they perfected the use of arches that could be built by creating a wooden form, then pouring the concrete into it. A rounded arch allows the weight above it to be spread over the columns below and is stronger than a square-topped archway. So by the time the Colosseum was begun in 1872, they were experienced in using concrete and arches and able to make these large-scale structures. Roman concrete was thicker than the concrete we see today, and it required the builders layer the concrete mix, then the stone.
It's like a guacamole dip, isn't it? Layers. Layers upon layers.
The Colosseum... did not allow women except for one particular section of it. All the rest were men. Fancy that. And it could be emptied in 11 minutes. So you've got 50,000 people and it could be emptied in 11 minutes.
They've worked out their exit strategies.
My God, it takes us 2 minutes to get up from the seat.
Yes. And we're groaning and complaining. Oh,
my God.
My legs don't work, my knees.
Yeah, the entire Colosseum could be emptied in less than 11 minutes. I found that just astounding. Mm. So the emperors and senators sat nearer the floor.
You know why? You know why they were the best seats? Because they would get splattered with blood and they could have little titbits thrown to them.
Oh, horrible.
Nice.
Did you know that they actually had naval battles?
Naval battles?
Naval battles.
Oh, this
in
is
the
like,
Colosseum.
Like ships, water.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm trying to work out how on earth did they get water? I know that the top of the Colosseum was wood, but how did they make it watertight?
Okay. In the beginning, the hypogeum, or area under the floor, was different. Wood beams would be put into slots to hold up the wooden floor. This would raise the floor to a height that would allow those in the lower seats to better view. However, the wooden floor beams could be removed and the Colosseum flooded. This allowed the Romans to stage mock naval battles complete with ships.
That's insane.
However, the fight to the death in these battles was very real. It would have taken about 4 million gallons of water to fill the arena. And because the Colosseum sits between three hills, the water would flow down these hills into the San Gregorio River.
Oh, beautiful.
Which would run, and it still runs, under the city of Rome. And a small rivulet would run directly under the Colosseum, and therefore it would get filled that way.
That's the ingenuity of their engineers is quite astounding.
Yeah, so remember they perfected waterproof concrete for their baths, and so 18 square holes around the Colosseum allowed rainwater to drain from the arena. These would be blocked and water diverted in. It took about half a day to flood the Colosseum to a height of about 5 to 6 feet. Condemned criminals and captives would fight in the area as the water rose around them. Most people of this time could not swim, and the men were weighted down with armour or weapons.
Oh. So they had the choice of sink or swim, being fast and being able to move and float, or having to try and be protected and kill the other one who's moving quick. Oh, I don't know.
Yep. So these battles were like huge. There were these vessels that were created. And in some stories, they say that the vessels could actually float around the Colosseum floor. But some people don't think that that was really a possibility because of the size of the vessels and the weight of the vessels and the amount of water that was there.
They'd have to be flat-bottom barges or something.
They thought they were flat and kind of stable in one area and then, you know, it all went on around that. So it's like this is pretty insane. So the floor was made of wood as we said, and yes, I am reading these notes because there's copious.
You didn't memorize them?
No, there's copious notes about how this stuff was all built. And I got the poos halfway through when I learned about what they used to do with the animals. But anyway, we'll get to that bit.
She's a real animal lover, everyone.
So often food was served during the battles for entertainment.
Just like when you go to the cinema and you get those nice lounges.
Hottest doggers, anyone? Hottest doggers.
Wolf nipple chips. Another Life of Brian quote.
Yes. And it was not uncommon for people to throw the bones of their food and other discards onto the floor. And because wood rots, this is probably one of the first areas of the Colosseum to decay. So the Colosseum was used as an arena for over 500 years.
That's pretty good, you know, to hold up that long.
Yeah, but goodness gracious me, 500 years. And in AD 217, a fire broke out that damaged a lot of the wooden parts, including the wooden seating and that had been added to the upper floors. Now, this damage was not fully repaired for 30-odd years. And then there were more repairs done 10 years later and, almost 50 years later after that. Now, the last reported gladiator fights were held in 435 AD.
I think, yeah. I was waiting for the AD or the BC.
But animal hunts still went on until at least 523 AD.
Oh, so they use it like a bull ring now in Spain, yeah. Okay.
By the late 6th century, a small chapel was built in the arena, and that was followed by a cemetery. And people built homes and workshops inside the arched areas under the seating. And these homes and workshops stayed there for centuries, with records showing that they were still being rented out as late as the 1100s. Now, around the 1200s, the whole thing was converted into a castle, and it was owned by the Frangipani family.
Oh, nice.
Then in 1349... I'll
get some of those stickers on my car.
There was a large earthquake. Be aware that won't last. It caused a lot of damage, and it included the collapse of the south wall. So people started to take the rubble from the Colosseum parts that had broken off, and started to build homes and churches and hospitals from them.
Ooh.
And for 500 years, from the 14th to the 19th century, it was used by a religious order. The interior was stripped of all stone and metal, and the marble was burned to make quicklime, which was used in mortars, plasters and cements. And today, of course, it is a tourist attraction. Now, just a couple of things.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm waiting.
In the 16th century, it was also a site for a wool factory that was staffed by former sex workers.
Hang on, what's it, a factory?
A wool factory.
W-O-O-L, wool. Yeah. Right, okay.
That was staffed by former sex workers.
Okay. I suppose at some stage or other you just get too ugly for that.
It was, like you said, a rich family's fortress and a bull ring. It was damaged by fire and struck by earthquakes five times.
Just want to say, no offence there to our sex workers. You provide a wonderful job in the community.
Oh, bless you for being there. Yeah, that's what I say.
Thank you for taking up the slack.
Yeah. But due to the belief that Christian martyrs had once been fed to the lions in the area, the Colosseum became a popular pilgrimage point. The problem is there is little evidence that Christians were actually killed in the arena.
But it makes a good story, Renata, having martyrs everywhere.
That kind of blew my mind.
Mm.
I didn't think that until this point.
Always throwing Christians to the lions
yes.
in there.
And it didn't help that in 1749, Pope Benedict the 14th
wrote it into the Bible,
endorsed the view that the Colosseum was a sacred site, and he outlawed the use of its stones in other buildings.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, the fact that they stopped stripping the Colosseum.
Mm. Now, plant life, which is really kind of interesting. You don't think when you look at the Colosseum nowadays that it would have been abundant with different plant life.
No.
But they talk about the fact that there were exotic plants found nowhere else in Rome and Italy other than the Colosseum.
Mm.
Now, how do you think they got there?
In the poo of the animals.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. In the poo of the animals that were bought from all over the world.
Jeez, they must have been backed up for a bit to bring it out with them.
And they would, of course, poop and leave the seeds in the area. And there were these beautiful gardens that grew in the Colosseum.
See how something beautiful can grow out of such horror, Renata?
No.
Okay.
No. That sort of comes from a book called Rome's Colosseum Was Once a Wild Tangled Garden. And it kind of says that undoubtedly some Christians were killed in the Colosseum. But as far as we can tell right now, their religion was incidental and they were simply part of normal spectacles. So there was nothing special about the Christians.
Yeah.
And they weren't brought in.
Oh, look, Renata, they think there's something special.
All right, okay.
Don't take their special from them, because we all need to have something in our lives that makes us feel special.
Okay.
I'm digging a hole.
Let me tell you the types of animals they brought in. Okay.
Please do. Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Rhinos, hippos, crocodiles, giraffes, elephants, gazelles, antelopes, jackals, ostriches, hyenas, cheetahs, panthers, bears and leopards, as well as donkeys, camels, horses, rabbits, deer, boars and wolves, to name a few. Where did the Romans find all of these animals? Crocodiles, rhinos, hippos and giraffes, probably from South Egypt. Gazelles, antelopes, jackals, ostriches, hyenas, lions, cheetahs, panthers and elephants from North Africa.
Yeah, oh wow.
Bears, probably from Morocco. And
Romania.
From Italy and other European countries, they would have had hares, roe deer, wild pigs, donkeys, bears, bison, bulls, wolves and moose.
Moose.
Now, one thing that I didn't actually write this down because after I read it, it sunk into my memory.
Yep.
And this is a trigger warning, but I want to include this because this kind of just shows the depravity and what was required to entertain people, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were special people that taught the animals how to have sex with human beings.
They were
how to have sex with human beings. And this was part of the spectacle.
Wow. You sure it's not and Amsterdam?
No. And sometimes during this, other animals were brought in to eat the people.
Whilst they were having sex with the animals.
It wasn't the people doing it. The animals were brought in, and often the people were strapped down so that they had no way of escaping.
Oh, dear.
And this is horrific.
Yeah.
And this was entertainment in good old Rome days.
And each time they do some sort of entertainment which is shocking, then they've got to outdo it the next time. And it was just escalating and escalating. And
how do you outdo a sea battle in the middle of the Colosseum in Rome? How do you outdo that?
Yeah.
By greater torture.
Yeah.
People wanted to see blood.
Yep.
And it wasn't enough just to kill someone. It had to be ritualistic, and it had to be the worst type of killing.
It had to be something that you just would not expect to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So.
No wonder you packed the poos about it.
Yeah. I found it very, very horrible, this whole history stuff. I mean, the Colosseum itself is an amazing building, I am sure. But to me, if you ask me right now, without even hearing the stories, is the place haunted? Yes.
So much trauma soaked into it.
Yep. I would absolutely say so. Oh, it'd be interesting to see how I would react to actually being there.
I've been there.
Mm.
And I walked out onto one of the balconies where you then go and stand and you look over the floor of what was the floor of the Colosseum. And it now looks like a rat's maze where you would look down and you'd see the rat going through the maze because the wooden floorboards have completely gone. And it's just all the tunnels that are left. Mm-hmm. And at that time when I went, this is like 25 years ago I went, so I was fascinated by ghosts and the paranormal, but I didn't have the knowledge I have now.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up to the edge and I kept thinking to myself, I wonder if I will feel anything. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's going to be anything that comes off this place, knowing that, you know, we've just been told the history of some of it, and nothing like what you told me. And I remember standing there and it was hot. And I just felt like there was this wave of, I don't want to call it sickness, maybe despair that washed over me. And I thought, hang on, is this my imagination because I know what happened here, or did I just feel that? So it's an impressive structure. It is. It sort of blows your mind to think that this was built so long ago. But then the depravity of what happened there is just disturbing. So, are you handing it to me? Okay. Now, would you believe it was actually difficult to find many stories, ghost stories, associated with the Colosseum? There was a couple of things that were repeated over and over. I found this really bizarre thing from ghostlogs.com, Spirits, the Colosseum, and the Spirits of the Gladiators. I'll just read it out to you because it's just odd. I almost made it the soundscape, but I wasn't... Yeah, the other one was better. Hi, my name is Harry Price. I lived from 17th January 1881 to the 29th of March 1948.
Our Harry Price?
Yeah, they're dead. So they've introduced themselves. Hi, my name's Harry Price.
All right.
But they're dead, so it's a ghost. I was a British psychic researcher and gained public prominence for investigating psychical phenomena exposing fraudulent spiritualist mediums. There is one place I've always wanted to go, the Colosseum. Surely you've heard of the Colosseum, Rome's most popular tourist attraction. For almost 400 years, gladiators would often fight to their death for entertainment. It is estimated in that time close to 400,000 people died in what is known as the Flavian Amphitheatre. Even sceptics can be convinced that the spirit of the gladiators live on. It is not surprising that visitors today claim to hear the cheers and screams from a crowd while there is no sign of people in that particular section or ghostly figures wandering the staircases. Is it painting souls of the deceased gladiators? Some say the vaults are active by the spirits of gladiators waiting to fight, actors waiting to perform, and prisoners becoming prepared for execution. There have been several accounts of cold touches or pushes that have been felt by both tourists and employees. Even sounds of animals have been heard within the vaults. If you think the belief has now died down, you are greatly mistaken. Every now and again, someone says he has seen a ghost walking around in the cellars, even dragging heavy and noisy chains. Have you heard the spirits of the gladiators while visiting Rome? Isn't that... It's just bizarre that this person has written this as if they're Harry Price. Mm-hmm. That was odd.
Mm. Weird.
Now... let me just give you some little bits and pieces, because our friend Amy from Amy's Crypt has been to the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. Now, she put a little report in there about countless staff, visitors, passers-by have reported paranormal experiences at the Colosseum. The apparitions are supposed to be common. The most frequently seen one is that of a Roman soldier. The Lone Guard is usually seen at night when the landmark has been closed to the public, still protecting the Colosseum. Others have reported the site grouped apparitions of a full crowd in the stadium bleachers, seeming to cheer on a long past spectacle before suddenly vanishing. Now, the problem with the Colosseum, when I was there, there would be actors everywhere dressed as Colosseum gladiators, guards, etc., etc., and they would come up to you and you'd get photos with them, and they want money. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't put it past them that they were hanging around there still at night waiting to get photos with whoever they could. I really enjoyed Rome and Italy and the Colosseum and all of that, but as my husband said, it was, and I really apologize to anyone who was from Italy, it was like vultures that were sitting on the long dead carcass of a ancient being, trying to get as much off it as they possibly could. Mm-hmm. It was very scammy. Mm-hmm. It was quite disappointing that way. Like you'd go to eat somewhere nearby and you'd order a chicken schnitzel and you'd get a chicken schnitzel on the plate. That was it. But that wasn't the worst of it. If you wanted knives and forks, you had to pay extra.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like they were gouging you for every little thing they possibly could. Now, I did find a ghost story here about the Colosseum, the seventh door to hell. Mm-hmm. Now, this is from buzzfortours.com. In medieval times, it was thought this was one of the seven doors leading to hell, probably a legacy from the gladiator fights. Indeed, at the end of each bout, a strange figure appeared dressed as Charon, the ferryman, for the souls of the deceased to the world of the dead. He would use a red-hot iron to check if the victim was dead, and if so, he would carry him through one of the doors of the Colosseum, Libertina's door, hence the legend. Mm-hmm. So that's, you mentioned the doors to hell as well. So that's how that legend came about. It was a character that they used to employ in the Colosseum times to act out that. It's how they got the bodies out, made it more theatrical. There is also this one here. It was once thought that the paining souls of the deceased gladiators wandered inside the building. If you think the belief has now died down, you are greatly mistaken. Geez, that sounds just like it came out of somewhere else I just read.
The Harry Price thing?
Funny about that, isn't it? Somebody's doing something. At least I'm saying where it's coming from. But every now and then they do see ghosts walking around the cells dragging heavy chains. Mm. Oh, there we go again.
Yes.
Nobody comes up with an original idea, do they? No. Unless you're a psychic, then you can make shit up and pretend that it's a ghost and all of a sudden it becomes legend. Did I just say that with my outside voice?
You did. Ouch.
Sorry about that, Renata. Stop making shit up. Have you heard of the Temple of Beelzebub?
Yes.
Oh.
That's there too.
Yeah, in medieval times, it was thought that some evil lovers had built a temple inside the Colosseum dedicated to Beelzebub. It says Beelzebub.
Beelzebub? Is that Beelzebub's brother?
Yeah, boy. I think that might be a typo. All hail Beelzebub, a Philistine divinity. There you go. Referred in the Bible as the prince of all demons. Beelzebub will never be the same again. Oh, no. According to the legend, in order to become members of the sect, one had to answer the following question. Colosseum, or do you adore him? Beelzebub. Some believe the name Colosseum may have been derived from this phrase. I don't know how they worked that out. Do you adore him? Well, anyway, a place of magic.
Right.
All right. Seems that the poet Virgil... going to giggle at everything, aren't we? A necromancer, according to medieval beliefs, would perform his magic rituals inside the building. I wonder if that was the priest that needed the virgin boy. It was also thought that in the 15th century, witches and sorcerers would meet here
to
prepare their magic potions. They'd burn shit with herbs that only grew in the grounds.
There you go.
The beliefs seem partly confirmed by the finding of some plants of non-Indigenous origins that these characteristics may well have used. Mm-hmm. So they're mixing up the thing, the fact that these animals have pooped out seeds and that it's grown plants and they've got, oh, well, the witches have planted them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bloody witches, they're getting everything, don't they?
Oh, they do.
The prophecy of the end of the world. In the text by Bede, the Venerable, an English Benedictine monk. He wrote a number of...
Bede?
Bede. B-E-D-E. Bede. Hello, Bede. We've got no hope. We're never going to get through this.
Bead.
No, bead is B-E-A-D. This is B-E-D-E.
Yeah, bead.
But we say Old Englishy. Oh, now my nose is running. That's all right. That's what a T-shirt's for. Just wipe it on that. All right, so Betty. The Venerable. Oh, God. I can't find a spot. Wrote a number of historical books. There is mention of a prophecy according to which if the Colosseum collapses, so would Rome and then the world. The prophecy should mainly be taken as an allegory, a pagan warning against the eventual triumph of Christianity over the Roman Empire.
And so it happened.
One legend later to be amply denied has Emperor Nero slaying the Christians inside the arena, which you just also said that never really happened.
Bullshit.
And then there's another report there about the screams of animals and things like that. And they talk about hot and cold spots in there. But it is below ground and there's a lot of stone, so it could be that it's just naturally cooler down there.
Yep.
All right, I'm scanning. Oh, now look, see, I got a little bit desperate because there was just the same thing over and over and over. So I thought, let's look for some ghost stories nearby. Because there was quite a few ghost stories from the era that were nearby. Let me share. Oh, how am I going for time? I can get a few out. What about Nero and the walnut tree? Do you want to hear about Nero and the walnut tree?
Yes.
After Nero committed suicide, he was buried on the Pincian Hill. Do you want to correct me on that one too?
No.
Okay, Pincian, which now overlooks the Piazza del Popolo. Legend has it that after his death, he took the form of black crows and feasted with witches and demons in a nearby walnut tree.
Oh, that's just so true. That's true.
Considering Nero's hedonistic parties of the Domus Aurea, perhaps it's not surprising that he continued to feast in the afterlife. In the 11th century, in an attempt to chase away Nero's troublesome ghost, the Pope had the tree cut down.
Oh,
they
nuts.
Cut down Nero's nuts. And a chapel. Damn you, Nero, I'm going to build a chapel on your nuts, was built in his place. If you ever visit the church of Santa Maria de Popolo, in the hope of catching a glimpse of the emperor, however, you will be disappointed, as the Pope's plan seems to have worked. Mm. One of the few times an exorcism's worked. Mm-hmm. Ever since the construction of the church, there have been no sightings of Nero's ghost.
He's moved on.
Oh, he has. He's got a better offer. I haven't actually read through all of this one, but we'll give it a crack for a cold read. Saving the best till last, of course. The Lost Hand of Costanza Conticupis. Got to say that very carefully. Palazzo Cupis on Via di Santa Maria dell'Anima. Yeah, that was good, wasn't
very
it?
Very nice. Very
It's rumoured to be haunted by the ghost of a 17th century woman, Costanza. A young woman was said to be one of the prettiest in Rome, graced with particularly beautiful hands.
Okay.
Bet she was in demand at the orgies. A sculptor made a stone copy of one of her hands and displayed it in his studio. One day a stranger visited the studio and, looking at the stone hand, said that the woman who the hand belonged to would soon lose it.
Oh.
Shortly afterwards, Costanza pricked her finger whilst doing some needlework. The injury became infected and spread, leading to the amputation of Constanza's hand and then her death from septicemia.
Oh, no.
If you're near the Palazzo Cupis one night when there's a full moon, look up at the window. You may see a ghostly hand.
Oh.
Then we have the tragic life of Beatrice Cenci. One of the most famous ghosts in Rome is another woman. I apologise to all those people who can speak Italian because I am butchering this. I'm just trying to remember how we do the che and the se, but we'll just make it up. So this is another young woman, Beatrice, which is such a Roman name, Cenci, whose story has inspired countless paintings, poems and plays. She was the daughter of the tyrannical aristocrat Francesco Cenci, who famously abused his wife and daughter. Oh, shame on you. His family plotted to have him killed and had him pushed over a balcony to make it look like an accident. Oops! Nana? Oh, look, he just fell off while I picked his feet up and threw him over backwards. Whoops. The plot was discovered, Beatrice, her brothers and stepmother were tortured and sentenced to death. The people of Rome protested against the decision, and there was considerable public sympathy for the condemned members of the Cenci family. But on the 11th of September, 1599, Beatrice was led to the scaffold on the Ponte Sant'Angelo and decapitated in front of her 12-year-old stepbrother, who was forced to watch the executions of the family. Wow. On the anniversary of her death, Beatrice can be seen carrying her severed head as she walks across the Ponte Sant'Angelo. As well as haunting the place of her death, she is also said to haunt where she spent her short tragic life. Modern inhabitants of her old family home in the Jewish ghetto Palazzo Cenci have seen her beautiful melancholy ghost and heard her weeping.
Oh dear.
I'm just trying to make sure I get the this came from througheternity.com. Save the best for last.
Okay, here we go.
Guess what the last ghost is going to be about.
What? A monk?
Oh, no. Oh. I think we're going to a little bit of a naughty one.
Oh, okay.
We're going to talk about the promiscuous Empress Messalina. Valeria Messalina, the young wife of the Emperor Claudius, was infamous for her for being a tart. Anyway, seriously, seriously adulterous? Serially, not seriously. Sorry. We need to finish this up and go on a holiday, Renata. Serially adulterous. Oh, what's this art? She allegedly once challenged Rome's most famous prostitute to a contest. Told you it was the best one for last. To see who could have the most sexual partners in one evening.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Phil and STD come along.
Oh.
And guess who won?
Oh.
Messalina won. She was a mess. Tripping for days. With a score of 25. She even had a runny nose. Okay, Juvenal also claims that the Empress regularly worked in a brothel under the name of She-Wolf.
Oh, my gosh. She probably had some sort of a disorder.
A nymphomaniac, I would dare say. Lucky girl. While such stories were probably greatly exaggerated, you reckon? It's not completely invented. There's no doubt that Messalina's behaviour displeased her husband. Claudius had turned a blind eye to Messalina's infidelity until she finally went too far, marrying a Roman senator and plotting to overthrow Claudius so she could replace him with her new husband. This was the final straw. Claudius sent a courier... It sounded as bad as sending a text. Claudius sent a courier to order Messalina to commit suicide.
Oh, yeah. You're talking to the lady that had 25 guys in one night. Yeah. Sorry.
According to Tacitus, she understood her fate and put her hand to the dagger. In her terror, she was applying it ineffectually to her throat and breast when a blow from the tribune drove it through her. So a blow from the tribune? Is that the newspaper? Somebody whacked it with a newspaper? Anyway, Claudius was also unlucky with his next wife. Well, there you go, Claudius. If you're going to tell them to... Yeah, anyway, Agrippina. I could have said Agrippina, who is rumoured to have poisoned him with mushrooms. There have been no sightings of Claudius's ghost. However, Messalina lives on. She is reported to haunt the Coppian Hill near the Colosseum, looking for a new lover. And there are even rumours that she pinches the bottom of young men in the Piazza Navona. The story of the insatiable empress was too good to end with her death, so it's no surprise that she continues to walk the streets of Rome.
Oh.
Is that a good one to end on?
It is. It is.
After, and that even brought the Colosseum back into it at the end.
After all of that. So really, in all of that, and in all the 500 years that everything's been going on or did go on in the Colosseum.
We've got moans, screams, animals calling out, phantom crowds, and a gladiator.
Yeah, very, very few ghost stories.
Yeah. But it seems that there are ghost stories, but it's all the same ghost story.
Yeah.
So does that mean that multiple people have had this experience, which in itself would be an interesting thing?
Mm-hmm.
And is it... A lot of it sounds like it's just residual energy, doesn't it? Doesn't sound like there's any intelligence behind it.
Yeah.
Did I tell you we got ripped off at the Colosseum?
No.
There was this man standing there and he had these little Disney characters and he put music on and they would dance all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, how are they doing that? I don't know. And he wanted 10 euros or 10 something. Anyway, it was not cheap, but the kids loved it because Alex was only 4 and Hannah was almost 2. And we're looking at it going, oh, we'll get those. We'll put some music on it. We'll dance for the kids. That's great. So we bought it and he disappeared. And then we took it home and we unpacked it. And it was literally pieces of paper that have been cut out with Disney pictures on it with a piece of fishing line attached to it. So he must have had it attached to his toe. So every time they put the music on, they jiggle to the music.
Oh.
But it was him jiggling it.
Oh.
So we thought that it was something, I don't know. I don't know. We were just gullible. Very gullible.
Wow.
Anyway, they became a little bit of a story. So I always like to share something personal from the Rekovich travels, farting in a cave and being ripped off at the Colosseum, you know.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the True Hauntings podcast.
Oh, you're wrapping up, Renata.
Yes. Is the Colosseum haunted?
Look, I reckon there's residual stuff going on there. I reckon there is so much trauma that has happened in that location. There has to be something lingering.
Mm.
But I would be interested to take you there to see what you felt.
Yeah. And it's one of those places where it would be really hard to have some quiet time.
Yeah.
You would have to literally book in a special time to
with
go
Messalina.
In there where it was very, very quiet so that you could, you know, really get into it. I think it's got a road all the way around it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it does. There's traffic and everything everywhere. But it is a magnificent structure. And to think of how long ago it was built and what's happened to it in the meantime, it's part of history.
Yeah, it is.
Sad part of history, but it's still part of history.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of True Hauntings. We are going to wrap it and we are going to head out of here and get on that plane and fly to the UK on Monday. and you guys will be listening to this as we've gotten home, actually. We'll be home for about a week, I'd say, at this stage.
Yep.
And you can follow all our adventures on YouTube and Renata. It's Ghost Grannies at the moment because that is trending quite well, thanks to Isaac. And we will be back with a new True Hauntings next week. Thanks for being with us. Stay spooky and...
see you on the dark side.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com. True Hauntings is a part of the Human Labs Podcast Network.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.